Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Hello and welcome to the Hogan Era Podcast. I am your host, JP John Pies, right here on the two-man power trip of wrestling's podcasting empire, part of the TMPT feed, right here on the two-man power trip. We are, of course, talking about the greatest era ever in the history of the business, the golden era of wrestling, according to some, 1984 to 1993 in the WWF, affectionately known as the Hogan Era. Talking about some of the greatest matches, moments, and feuds of all time, all in that Hogan Era, not just involving Hulk Hogan, but some other of the greatest names ever in the history of the business. Rowdy Roddy Piper, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, the Honky Tonk Man, Andre the Giant, Macho Man, Randy Savage, the Ultimate Warrior, and the list goes on and on and on. Of course, this is the era that made Vince McMahon into a multi-time billionaire, and he's in a bunch of trouble once again. We'll see if this any of this alleged stuff is coming out as true, but looks like he might be in trouble again if you're reading the news. But of course, let's talk about what's going on here on the Hogan Era. We've been talking about some of the guys from the past that made a big dent in the Hogan Era, not just the big stars, not just the greatest tag team wrestlers of the era, not even some goofy gimmicks of the era. We're just talking about some of the carpenters, some of the enhancement guys, some of the guys that really were doing a lot of jobs in TV, but also having a lot of TV time as well. That TV equity to me is always huge, because who are you remembering from that era? I mean, some guys you say, oh, you know, this guy was undefeated for a brief period of time, or there were this guy beat this guy on this pay-per-view, but then maybe you didn't hear from him for a while. But who are the guys that really had the most TV time? Who are the guys you really remember, whether they're winning or losing? And last week we talked about Iron Mike Sharp. This week we're talking about Steve Lombardi, a.k.a. the Brooklyn Brawler. So if you look at it, my God, over 1,500 matches in the WWE, at least. So, I mean, quite a run in the WWE. Just insane to think 40-year career, whether it be in front of the scenes or behind the scenes, 20 years in the ring from 1983 to 2002. So it just a remarkable run for the Brooklyn Brawler. Pre-Hogan era, he really makes his debut July 15th, 1983, losing to Sweet Hansen. During that time in 83, he does have an Intercontinental title match, loses to Don Morocco, but he is on TV a lot. Then, obviously, the late 83 goes into 84, and then the Hogan era begins, and his first official match of the Hogan era, 1-3-84 from Allentown, PA, was a loss to Dr. D. David Schultz. Two-minute match there on TV for Championship Wrestling TV, but it's one of those things where, okay, we kind of know what he is or what he's going to start as and what he's going to be as far as the guy that's really going to get other guys over, the enhancement talent, the carpenter, the guy that's going to make the other guy shine. You know, he's going to have the Ultimate Warrior's debut match and all these guys' debut match, and when he comes to the curtain, they're going to ask him, does this guy have it, does this guy not have it? He's kind of the gatekeeper, if you will, kind of the guy that's going to tell the guys in the back who's good and who's not. One of those guys that, hey, maybe he's not winning on TV, or maybe he's not the most important character, but behind the scenes, he's super important because he's getting a read for the wrestlers. He can have good matches with all these guys. He can make them look like $1 million, but he's also the guy when they come behind the curtain that they trust enough to say, hey, is this guy good? Does this guy have it? Does this guy not? What do you think here? And if they like a guy enough, like Warrior, it's like, hey, can you make this guy look good and really, you know, have make him more successful in his job of becoming a huge WWE superstar down the line? So big role that he played. And it's one of those things where I feel like the importance of that role was forgotten for a long time. But maybe, and maybe I'm going to help that notion out, but I think that maybe people are starting to get a little smarter than that and realize, like, man, those guys, while they might have been losing a lot on TV, they really meant a lot to the WWF and the WWE, and they really meant a lot to the company for sure. So as we roll through 1984, wrestling the Wild Samoans, wrestling the Iron Sheik, wrestling Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, SD Jones, Eddie Gilbert, the Max Superstar, Mr. Fuji, Tiger Chung Lee, Pat Patterson, B. Brian Blair, again, Dr. D. David Schultz, Charlie Fulton, Rene Goulet. Obviously, these are all losses along his run. Even in 84, when they were bringing in kind of all these random guys, losing to Big Ron Shaw, the Tonga Kid, Buzz Sawyer, Butcher Vershawn, taking a bunch of losses on TV, doesn't necessarily hurt him or not really, if you look at it in the long run. But it's one of those things where He's on TV. He's wrestling all these guys, and he's really just, to me, building up TV equity and building up his brand behind the stage, even to everybody behind the scenes. No problem losing, no problem making the other guy look good, no problem putting the other guy over. So the Brooklyn Brawler character, if you will, we'll get into that in just in a minute. Just want to run through 84. The Briscoe brothers, Rocky Johnson, Bret Hart, Jim Powers, taking all losses to these guys. But my God, is there anybody really like he didn't work with? It's just a, you know, pretty amazing to think of all the guys that he did wrestle and that he did work with. It's just, it almost seems like a guy worked with pretty much anybody and everybody in the WWF. Did have a match with the Macho Man Randy Savage in 1987, a few matches. It's one of those things where he pretty much wrestled everybody but Hogan. And, you know, Warrior, Savage, Slaughter. I mean, all these guys he wrestled, excuse me, but he didn't wrestle the Immortal Hulk Hogan. But pretty much everyone else he did. Barry Windham, the Moondogs, the British Bulldogs, David San Martino, the Magnificent Morocco, the Hart Foundation, and Ricky Steamboat just wrestled everybody here. 85, getting a tag team title match with Johnny Rods, losing to U.S. Express. Losing to Salvatore Bellomo, losing to Junkyard Dog, Tito Santana, Tony Garea, Jesse the Body Ventura, Big John Stud, play face or heel, you know, playing so many kind of different characters and doing so many different things. And if you look at his run, he's, you know, he's getting title shots in TV, losing intercontinental title shots in 86 against Tito Santana. So it's not like he's in a terrible spot and he's just, you know, just losing. At least he is getting some TV time or some major TV time, more than a lot of other people would get. But he's also wrestling the creme de la creme. He's wrestling some pretty good guys along the way as well. Wrestling Corporal Kirshner a bunch, Hillbilly Jim a bunch, Jim Brunzel, the Killer Bees, of course, just Pedro Morales even, Lanny Poffo, King Tonga, a.k.a. Haku, Scott McGee, Dan Spivey. And then, you know, occasionally here and there, he will pick up some wins, gets a win over Paul Roma. So not all losses, and mostly losses, but not all losses. He does occasionally pick up some victories along the way. When you really kind of just look at his run, and we'll go into 87, where he loses to Macho Man Randy Savage a few times and a few different gimmicks that he'll play. Also, just thrown out there, did briefly play Kim Chi sometimes as well and wrestle as Kim Chi under, obviously, the hood, along with Kamala. But really, he'd be wrestling and taking the loss because they want to keep Kamala nice and strong. So even that, it's like, hey, we're going to put you in a different character. How adaptable are you? Are you going to want to play a different character? No problem. Suits up, does the job, and there he goes. So, you know, good on him, and obviously good on Brooklyn Brawler, who, like I said, had a 40-year run in the WWE. And obviously, I mean, it's a pretty damn long time if you think about it. I mean, guy was working there forever. Pretty crazy. 1987 has a brief feud with Paul Roma. They wrestle for all over the place, really taking that match on TV, on the Prism Network, on MSG. I mean, they're wrestling pretty much anywhere and everywhere. And Paul Roma this time switching it up and getting some victories over the Brooklyn Brawler. Brooklyn Brawler just going to win over Siva Afi in 87. So a nice little win there. Starts a little bit of a mini feud, I guess you could say, with Outback Jack. Takes a bunch of losses to him. Loses to Jerry Allen. Loses to Dick Slater, Sam Houston, Billy Jack Haynes, the Junkyard Dog. Then, of course, like I mentioned, the first match for the first couple matches, actually, for the Dingo Warrior before he became known as the Ultimate Warrior. Takes losses there on house shows in June of 1987. Primetime Wrestling loses to Hillbilly Jim on television. Superstar Billy Graham on Superstars, the Young Stallions. Like I mentioned, Macho Man Randy Savage, Shake the Snake Roberts, Strike Force, the Killer Bees, Sam Houston. A bunch of losses. Again, a bunch of matches with the Ultimate Warrior. A bunch of losses to Ivan Putski, losing to the Blue Blazer, losing to Greg the Hammer Valentine, losing to Brady Boone, losing to Coco Beware, losing to Sam Houston. Again, and really, as we're heading from 1988 here into 1989, the end of 88, a bunch of TV matches on NESN, on the MSG network, losing to the Blue Blazer. And on the Z Channel, which is the television station out there in LA, Paul Roma defeated the Brooklyn Brawler in about a 15-minute match. So, I mean, boy, was Roma getting a bunch of TV time, and so was the Brooklyn Brawler there. takes a bunch of losses to the mighty Hercules. Then all of a sudden, he's getting some, well, really exchanging some wins with Scott Casey. So that was pretty interesting. And Casey's not like, you know, he was getting the bottom of the barrel there. Casey was a part of Survivor Series and was getting some wins. So pretty interesting. He takes some wins over Scott Casey. He gets some wins over Jose Estrada, gets a bunch of victories over Jim Powers towards the end of 1988. So then really, as he's basically Steve Lombardi at that point, and here he's really going to become the Brooklyn Brawler. I mean, he's really going to take that character and really enhance it. And as we get into January of 1989, he's going to have Bobby the Brain Heenan as his manager. He can't get better than that. The greatest manager ever in history of the business. So it's one of those things where, okay, we're going to take him seriously, and okay, he's going to get a bunch of wins. The Red Rooster is going to break up with Bobby the Brain Heenan, and he's going to have the Brooklyn Brawler enter the fold and be a part of his stable. Pretty damn big time. I know he's not going to get this huge push or anything like that, but TV time, the TV equity, Heenan as the manager, nothing but positive. That's a very, very good thing for the Brooklyn Brawler. So basically, this Brooklyn Brawler character, he's got the Yankee torn up t-shirt. He's got the hat. He's saying he's, you know, he's basically this tough New York guy. Looks almost like a little bit of a street thug or maybe a street fighter kind of thing. He's got battered jeans. So one of the things where he's becoming this crazy character, and he's becoming more than just this quote unquote job guy or this quote unquote enhancement talent or this quote unquote carpenter. He's becoming an actual character, more of a sports entertainer within the ranks of the WWE. Of course, that New York Yankees t-shirt would become pretty damn iconic for him. And whether, you know, wherever he was in New York, kind of got it. It was interesting because obviously big heel will always get booed, but in New York, he always kind of got that pop for whatever reason. I know he's with Heenan and I know he's a heel, but I remember going to in New Jersey, New York area, there was always kind of like a small love for the Brooklyn Brawler for whatever reason. So he definitely had that type of kind of quiet charisma to him because he was a little bit more popular than I think people may give him credit for. Very, very memorable character for sure. So as we enter 89, obviously he starts a feud with the Red Rooster. They have matches all over this globe, whether it's on TV or not. On Saturday night's main event, number 20 from Hershey, PA, the Red Rooster defeated the Brooklyn Brawler only in a minute, short match. Then TV taping on Superstars, Brooklyn Brawler defeated Mario Mancini. He would defeat Reno Riggins. He would defeat David Stoudemire. So he is getting some wins despite the loss and quick loss on Saturday night's main event to the Red Rooster. He would get his win back 2/20/1989 MSG. On the MSG Network, Madison Square Garden, New York, New York. Brooklyn Brawler defeated the Red Rooster in 14 minutes and 15 seconds. A long match, and he gets his win back there. But then they would have a bunch of house show matches where the Red Rooster would win. The Red Rooster then on NESN and then on MSG back-to-back, same day, 3/18/1989. The Red Rooster defeated the Brooklyn Brawler in 11 minutes on both of those shows. Interestingly enough, the real main event of those shows, steel cage match between Hulk Hogan and the Big Boss Man, which were awesome matches. And then also part of those shows, the Rockers and the Brainbusters, were all part of the MSG show, the Rockers and the Brainbusters. Also Mr. Perfect and Ronnie Garvin as well. So damn good MSG card on 3/18/1989. Superstars taping number 138. Red Rooster defeated Brooklyn Brawler in 5 minutes. So the TV feud in 89 did continue even after WrestleMania, because, of course, WrestleMania 5, the Red Rooster and Bobby the Stain Heenan would have a match. And, of course, Bobby the Stain Heenan and Red Rooster would have that feud. Terrible, terrible gimmick the Red Rooster was. But, of course, Red Rooster did quickly defeat the Brain there at WrestleMania 5. Only 30-second match, short match, but he does get the win. So when you really kind of look at what's going on here with the Brooklyn Brawler, he didn't get the WrestleMania match per se, but he was on WrestleMania there because he was in the corner of Bobby Stain Heenan. Bobby Stain Heenan takes a quick loss, and obviously Brooklyn Brawler does get involved in that match as well. Then he continues literally for months feuding with the Brooklyn Brawler and taking all those house show losses matches. Just absolutely crazy how many times that those two wrestled. He does wrestle King Hacksaw Jim Duggan on 8/29/89 primetime wrestling TV tapings. Duggan defeats Brawler in about 7 minutes. Bushwhackers, a bunch of matches against Brooklyn Brawler and Ray Oakley. Bushwhackers get the win. Roddy Piper would defeat Brooklyn Brawler in Superstars 163. So after that kind of brief winning streak and the brief feud with Red Rooster, then he goes back to losing to guys like Piper, Tugboat, Tim Horner, Coco Beware, etc. He does get some wins on house shows over Al Perez, which is pretty interesting. But then, of course, the tables turn, and Al Perez gets a ton of victories over the Brooklyn Brawler on some house shows as well. Brawler also loses to Mr. Perfect, Jim Neidhart, with his tag team partner Cleo Reeves, loses to WWF Tag Team Champions Demolition, and they lose to the Rockers as well. Ton of TV matches against the Bushwhackers, Jimmy Snuka again, Tito Santana, Intercontinental title match on Wrestling Challenge 184, losing to the Ultimate Warrior, loses on Wrestling Challenge to Hercules, loses to the Rockers on Superstars taping number 182. Loses to Paul Roma and Tugboat and more to Jimmy Snuka. On TV, loses to Jim Duggan, the Bushwhackers, Tugboat, the Hart Foundation, Tito Santana, and then even gets a win on 5/27 primetime wrestling TV tapings before getting some wins over Brady Boone, Jim Brunzel to kind of get into the summer of 1990. So he's back on his winning ways here before he meets the franchise, Shane Douglas, and loses to Shane Douglas a few times on a bunch of house shows as well. As we scroll into 1990, loses to the Hart Foundation, loses to Sabah Simba, loses to Dustin Rhodes in 1990, loses to the Battle Cat, loses to Shane Douglas. Bunch of TV matches on the MSG network. Shane Douglas defeated the Brawler in 10 minutes on MSG 10/19/1990. A Intercontinental title match against the Texas Tornado. Kerry Von Erich loses, of course, there. Superstars number 218. Loses to Tito, loses to the Rockers, loses to Big Boss Man, loses to Greg Valentine, loses to Ricky the Dragon Steamboat in 1991 on TV, and Jim Duggan and Tugboat and the British Bulldog on TV. So a bunch of losses, of course, like we've kind of hammered that home, and a bunch of matches, but still on TV and still have over 1,500 matches in the WWE. Just pretty remarkable and pretty crazy. Then again, dressing up as Kim Chi in 1993, which of course was his feud then with Kamala. Kamala, of course, defeated Kim Chi on a ton of house shows all across this great land for about 2 months in a row in 1993. Then, of course, El Matador Tito Santana, Mr. Perfect, Raymond Rougeau, Bob Backlund on Raw defeated Kim Chi in about 4 minutes. Then, of course, as the Brooklyn Brawler on a bunch of house shows, does get victories over Jim Powers before eventually Kim Chi dons the mask again and takes a bunch more losses to Kamala in the European Spring Tour. Before Brooklyn Brawler, we get some more wins over Jim Powers. Owen Hart gets a victory over the Brooklyn Brawler. Jim Duggan on Superstars. The Smoking Guns defeated Damian Demento and the Brooklyn Brawler. And Virgil gets in the habit here. He gets a bunch of victories over Brooklyn Brawler as well. It's kind of switching back and forth on a bunch of different shows between Kim Chi and the Brooklyn Brawler, but obviously taking a ton of losses. Does get a big victory over Horace Hogan, a.k.a. the Predator, at a house show in 1993 as well. Tatanka defeats him on Monday Night Raw, number 25. Then Men on a Mission defeated him and Brian Costello in Superstars 357 before eventually falling to the Bushwhackers, Raw, number 29. 1-2-3 Kid on Superstars 361. As we head towards the end of the Hogan era here, his last TV matches losing in a six-man, Tatanka and the Smoking Guns defeated Barry Horowitz, Reno Riggins, and the Brooklyn Brawler. Then a WWF World Tag Team title match, the Steiner Brothers defeated Fred Williams and the Brooklyn Brawler. Then the Smoking Guns defeated Fred Williams and the Brooklyn Brawler as well. And that's pretty much the end of the Hogan era there. That was his last match, 8/18/1993. First, what I consider the Hogan era, of course, he would continue on and wrestle a ton more in the WWF. in 1993 and 1994, and then really continue on. Man, 1995, he'd still be wrestling in the WWF. 1996, 1997, he'd finally start to slow down. Only a few matches in 98, a few matches in 99, a bunch of matches in 2000 and 2001 before finally hanging up those tights in 2002, where he would have his real, I guess you could say, last real WWE matches per se. But he would be on the Vengeance match, a part of a APA Invitational Barroom Brawl in 2003, a Raw match in 2003, Raw match 2005, SmackDown, and Raw in 2006, Saturday Night's Main Event in 2007, Raw in 2010 and 2012, pay-per-view in 2012, and then even a Superstars match in 2013. So, man, what a run, what a career for Steve Lombardi, a.k.a. the Brooklyn Brawler. Maybe not the biggest superstar of all time, maybe not the most legendary superstar of all time, but I asked anybody who's a fan or ever was a fan or ever watched TV, do you know who the Brooklyn Brawler was? And they give a resounding yes. Saw him on TV, saw him wrestle thousands of times. So let's wrap it up and head towards plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at the Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. And of course, go to TeePublic, teepublic.com/store/TMPT. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next time for the Hogan Era Podcast. See you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website, tmptempire.com, and buy a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com. Two-man power trip, where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
This next contest is scheduled for one fall. Introducing first from Brooklyn, New York, weighing 247 pounds, the Brooklyn Brawler.
Brooklyn Brawler looked as though he spotted someone he knew.
And his opponent from Seattle, Washington.
Those families here tonight?
I would imagine.
Coming in from Brooklyn?
Yes, it could only be a member of the family who would want to speak to him. I don't think he has too
many
friends.
I didn't even think his family was speaking to him.
Maybe they're not. Maybe you're absolutely right.
But Greg the Hammer Valentine certainly has a lot of friends here tonight. The world over. Not only in Austin, Texas.
Sean, this should be a very, very interesting bout because the brawler, he doesn't mind whether he wins or loses as long as he really gets stuck into his opponent and beats the living tar out of him. Valentine, in a somewhat similar vein, his wrestling mode, he likes to really punish his opponents, and he doesn't mind if he gets punished too. And sometimes both these men will throw away the chance of a victory just to get up and hurt their opponents.
Well, both like a good fight. Hip toss there by Greg Valentine. And doesn't seem that we ever get too far into an encounter involving the brawler that he doesn't start whining.
It's a ploy that he uses, a mental ploy, and I don't think it's ever been too successful. His psychology is not to be admired, I don't think. Do you, Sean?
Personally, no. Double wrist lock there by the Hammer. Comes in that shoulder. Brawler turns it around to see if he can hold on. No, not for long. Got to stay clear of that elbow, though.
Both men showing some rather neat. Yes, you named it.
I just wasn't quite sure who was going to get it. It's the Brawler who kisses the elbow of the Hammer.
I get it, baby.
A big threat here from the brawler. He said that did it.
Yeah, I think.
Not quite sure what he's going to do, actually.
I think what he means is it's the end of trying to wrestle this man. Yeah. He's now going to resort to other methods. He's going to kick, fight, punch, scratch, do anything else except wrestle.
And there's a clear example of what he plans to do from this point on. Shot right to the throat.
It's a nice t-shirt he has on the brawler.
Probably was a nice t-shirt about 10 years ago. If that sweatshirt has ever seen a washing machine.
I very much doubt it. Probably clog up a washing machine.
Brawler steps out to think about it. Should do his thinking in the ring.
There was a good study there of the determination upon the face of the Hammer, Greg Valentine, and he just stalks his man, brawler here. Valentine has never been known for somebody who will waste energy on useless maneuvers. He waits until he's in close contact. He likes that close physical contact. And brawler trying to stay out of the way of that. Well, that's intelligent thinking. I would say on the part of the brawler, not noted for his intelligence.
Surprised when he did slip out there that he didn't look back. And now, Greg Valentine from behind. Chop to the throat. Brawler set into the steel ring post. Folks at ringside like that move.
They certainly did. And actually, Hammer is having everything his own way until then. Oh, what a desperation move that is. And the referee, he really is trying to show tolerance. He's trying to retain a certain amount of dignity, but it's awfully difficult with these two in the ring.
Considering the tactics that Brooklyn Brawler uses, I'm surprised that he is allowed to compete here in the World Wrestling Federation, given status as a singles competitor.
That was a nice shot, though.
He's been severely cautioned several times by the officials of the World Wrestling Federation, and yet he pays no regard at all.
No, he doesn't. And he's been disqualified a fair number of times. His record will come up for review, I'm sure, in front of Jack Tunney's committee. Referee's recommendations will also be included, so he better start being a nice boy around this time of the year, Christmas time.
Well, he's already been suspended a few times. It seems to set in, though. What, Alfred Hayes?
No. The message obviously hasn't been driven home forcibly enough yet. Nice back elbow, though, by him. So now again, he shows flashes of brilliance.
Hard into the ropes. Makes a mistake of putting the head down.
What a schoolboy error that.
Slam to the canvas. And a clothesline takes it down again. And now, a very open position, shall we say.
A dubious move there by the hammer, but it certainly has really reduced.
Here's a cover, hooks a leg.
It did his damage.
And superstar from Brooklyn, New York is out of this encounter. Greg the Hammer Valentine, victorious.